Hull House Podcast, we are back this week with a double threat in the music industry. Producer and singer Johan Lennox. He's a Massachusetts guy living out in LA these days. And his production credits include artists like Travis Scott, Selena Gomez, Kanye West, just to name a few. So, huge discography, and his vocal stuff as well is just so awesome. He just dropped a single with Cousin Stiz, and so just really versatile guy on both ends of the spectrum, and a lot of his influence actually comes from the fact that he's classically trained, which is really cool. He's been drawing a lot of comparisons to James Blake, the way he's bringing his classical edge over to hip-hop and modern music. He's looking to reshape the genre, and we just had a really awesome conversation with him. So without further ado, Johan Lennox, Hull House.
Sweet. Well, first of all, thank you so much just for doing this. I really appreciate it, especially on the fly. We're huge fans of, you know, stuff you've done production-wise. You're at vocal music as well. So just appreciate it.
Thank you. No problem. Where are you guys right now? Where is this actual house at?
Yeah, so we're in Hull, Massachusetts.
Got it.
What part of Mass are you from? Something? Sorry?
From Winchester.
Oh, cool.
Looking up Hull.
Yeah.
Oh, Hull's like this peninsula.
Yes, exactly.
Near Hingham.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
I don't know if I've ever been to Hull.
Maybe. Nantasket Beach, that ring a bell?
Yeah. I'm from Winchester. It's near like Medford and Arlington, like that rings a bell. It's like,
Yeah, north of the city, yeah.
15 minutes north, yeah.
Somerville.
I can take, like, there's like a Lowell line of the commuter rail that goes through my town that, like, so I can basically get into Boston in like 12 minutes from if I take that train.
Hell yeah. Nice. And so you're out in LA now, pretty much?
Yeah, I go back and forth. I mean, I was like, I spent most of the last summer in Boston, and then I usually come back in December for a bit. I mean, in normal times, I probably make like 5 or 6 trips out. My girlfriend lives in Boston and works at New Balance in Lawrence, Mass.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I'm just always back and forth.
Cool, awesome. Well, yeah, especially tonight. You know, you said you had a session later with 070, so you know we don't want to keep you too long. How much time do you have on the clock, you think?
We can do an hour right now. That's what you wanted to do, right?
Yeah, that's perfect. We generally go like 45 minutes.
Perfect.
So that's, yeah, on point. Cool, let's get into it then.
Yeah, dope, absolutely.
Hull House Podcast, Johan Lennox, Boston-ish native out in LA these days, and crazy portfolio you have. I was looking at the Spotify playlist that you had made about things that you had worked on or contributed towards, and the discography of the, you know, from St. John and Kanye to some of the other stuff you've done with Kanye, who's like one of our favorite artists of all time. And then, you know, even Selena Gomez on the list, just people that I even know about. And I was just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, just like scrolling, like Spotify, they have that thing where they have like the green hearts next to all the songs. Right when I looked at your thing, it was like all the songs were like green hearted before. I just like love so much of the music that you've made. It's awesome.
I love that. It's a good little anecdote.
Yeah, right. So, real surface level, we'll kind of just start with how you got into music, I suppose, or into the realm of music you're in now, because I know you're classically trained, and then I think I heard a story that you heard Kanye's Dark Twisted Fantasy and were kind of like, whoa, I could kind of maybe do something with this. And then obviously fast forward now, you know, you have a distinct style of contribution where like each of the songs that like, you know, that playlist where I was like listening to, I was like, oh, okay, I can see exactly how, you know, he would have contributed here because it's so specific, you know, your style and what you do, you know?
Yeah. I mean, pretty much got it. I was like studying and yeah, well, I don't know where to start, but I taught myself piano as a kid and sort of for a while I was interested in that, and then sort of realized I didn't like playing other people's music, like note for note or whatever. So I was like, got more interested in, like, I used to go see, like, the Boston Pops Orchestra play and at Symphony Hall, and they had, like, the conductor, John Williams, who was also, like, wrote all the big film scores for, you know, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, all that type of stuff. So I used to see him conducting that orchestra, and so I just wanted to follow in his footsteps. So my parents were, like, helped me get lessons at New England Conservatory in Boston on weekends where I was just starting to study to write classical music. And so I did that, and then I was doing it professionally. I was writing for orchestras in Boston and around the country and just totally living under a rock as far as pop culture is concerned. But But then, and then my friend Greg, who I grew up with in Winchester, I was at home at a house party at his house, and I was tripping on acid, and he played that album it had just come out, and I was just like blown away by, coming from a classical background and like seeing people, seeing like a mainstream sort of audience of my friends enjoying a lot of these like real crazy musical decisions he was making made me think like, this is a way I could do what I'm interested in, and it's like challenging music and stuff, but reach a bigger audience with it. And so,
do you remember like specifically what part of My Dark Twisted Fantasy? Because I mean, the opening of it is so epic that if you're tripping, I can definitely feel how like much that would make an impact.
Yeah, definitely Dark Fantasy, that opening song, and then like Runaway, I think, is the one to this day that really like, just the fact of it starting with like that single note piano solo for the first minute of the song almost, which is just like, yeah, it's just such a striking way to begin. And then sort of that like extended cello and like auto-tune vocal outro on it. It's just like the piano thing in particular is something that like with more, it's felt reminiscent of the type of stuff I would be doing in like the classical world anyway. So it was just cool to hear someone do that. And my friend just kept running it back and just like trying to get people at the party, like just be like, yo, this is crazy, right? This is so crazy. And I'm just like, that's pretty crazy, that like they're all into that, but because it's coming from Kanye, people are like, okay, yeah, this is actually really cool instead of just some experimental shit they'll never hear about.
And I saw you write, I think it was on Reddit, on the AMA that you did. You talked about working with Kanye and like the double vocals and the vocal stacks that you're doing. Just like one of my favorite moments, probably in like music ever, is that end part of Runaway where he's got the vocoder. He's just messing with his voice and it sounds like it's like a guitar and just humming and singing along. Like that had to have definitely had an impact on you, I feel like.
I mean, I think what I do is pretty different, but I think the reason I do it so much is because when I did it and some stuff with him, he like pointed it out as something he liked. So I think that he's probably really drawn to like vocal textures. I mean, I know the way he used like Bon Iver on his stuff, like, or Justin Vernon, whatever, like clearly he's into those types of textures, harmonies and all that type of stuff. But yeah, I think if anything, that for me, the inspiration for that probably came more from like singing in like college a cappella groups where I was like, everything was just all these stacked harmonies and stuff. And I like learned how to sing all those types of parts. And so, yeah, now I can just do it really easily. And no one else I know really does that the way I do it. So yeah, it's just like a texture that I can contribute. It's always like a signature for me.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's cool. Since we're on the topic, I'll go ahead and ask. I've been wanting to ask somebody this for a while through all the interviews and stuff that we've done. $1 million question. What is it like working with Kanye? What is it like being in the studio with him?
I mean, it was pretty brief. Like, I didn't really, like, deal with him for, like, days at a time. It was more like I met him, and then we, like, spoke on the phone a few times about, like, the direction for the project. But he was pretty clear on, like, what he wanted. He was very, like, calm, if that's what you mean. Like, he was just, like, kind of, like, awkward and, like, quiet, if anything. He wasn't like, I didn't see like the other side of, he clearly has,
which I feel like, I feel like that side is that side, and it makes sense when you say it like that. I can't imagine him just being so sporadic in the studio. I imagine he's very like level-headed, and
I think he is both, but I've definitely heard stories from friends who've worked with him that where he was just like jumping off the walls kind of shit. But yeah, from my experience, like, yeah, it was like a pretty sober kind of,
was it like laser focus?
Yeah, well, it was really hectic too, because it was like, we were just doing like 5 albums in 5 weeks, and so it's just like, I mean, that really means like, yeah, like 4 or 5 days, because it has to get mixed and stuff, and there's a release party, and then the next day you start, so it was just like, yeah, it was an insane way to do shit. Like the music that was on for the 2 albums that I worked on, the music that played at the release party didn't match what ended up being on the final album. Like on the Teyana Taylor album, like entire songs were cut or added in between that, the day after the party before it came out. So yeah, it was a ridiculous way to do things. But I think I definitely learned like how to just be like, it was just such an opportunity I didn't want to fuck up, that it was really just like good training and just like, just get this done by like any way possible, like don't say no, don't fuck it up,
Is that something that you generally see in the industry where like albums are like, I mean, obviously like things are always changing, but like one of the things you always hear about Kanye is that like, and even after the album drops, like Pablo, it's always changing even after. And so like, do you think that's something that's very specific with him, or is that something that's, you think that's going to become more of a trend in the industry?
I mean, I'm in favor of becoming more common. I mean, yeah, like I'm replacing. What I really wanted to do is on a bunch of the EPs I have out, I wanted to re-sing the vocals because I don't like how I sang a bunch of them. So I like did this like a couple months ago, just like 12 songs of mine, just re-sang the vocal. And what I really wanted to do is just replace the audio on Spotify without, you know, so it just keeps the play count and everything, which is pretty much exactly what he did. And I know other people do this too, but my label like has a policy against doing that. So instead what I'm going to do is just put out a second set of it, just like you know how Taylor Swift is re-recording her songs,
like the same stuff again.
Yeah,
I'm just gonna put out Johan's version of a bunch of these songs, like literally in a few weeks. Just yeah, but yeah, no, I definitely take inspiration from that. I think, yeah, no, I mean he's probably the extreme as far as just like last minute changes, and like I'm trying to think if I've ever. I mean, like in general, it's more like that in rap than it is in pop music, like pop. It's a little more planned out. Like I described the circumstances I've worked in hip hop to people that I work with on the pop side. And they're always just like, oh my God, I can't imagine, you know, and like, and even like the hip hop sessions often start at 10 PM or 11 PM, you know, which is like, when you go till like 5 or 6 or, you know, a lot of the people I work in that world, like wake up at 3 PM every day, which is just like cool. But it's just, yeah, it's just like completely opposite from the rest of the you know, like the pop side of the industry. So yeah, it's definitely just different.
Do you think that process puts you in a different mindset? Like the studio sessions I've been in, just staying up and like almost kind of grinding yourself out to get like creative stuff out there, and you almost like break yourself down being up for 11 straight hours sitting around in the studio smoking like an unbelievable amount of weed.
Yeah, all that sounds about right. I mean, yeah, definitely, like I wouldn't drink during a day session, but, like, when you get to a session at 11 p.m., everyone's drinking, so that's different. Obviously, there's, like, everyone's smoking, so, yeah, definitely, like, I mean, those sessions also, I think, like, usually it's, like, a lot of people there. Like, it's, like, there's an engineer, there's the artist, there's a couple other writers or producers, you know, there's like some, just the guy who rolls blunts and does nothing else, you know, it's just like a whole, you know what I mean? So it's
crucial to the process though.
Critical. So it's like, I feel like it feels almost like a little party or something. And I think the good thing about that, especially like my position, like I guess if I was the engineer in that situation, it'd be really stressful because like you actually do have to be on the ball and it's like 4 a.m. and you're just out of it. It would suck. But, like, I'm there just, like, doing some shit on the laptop or maybe going up to a synth and playing in a part or whatever, and I feel like I don't have to be really 100% of my game. And, like, yeah, there are, like, cool ideas that come out of that, like, deliriousness for sure. But I think I personally tend to be, like, more of a control freak with my own music, and so, like, I would much rather, like, wake up and get started on it in the morning than, like, be drunkenly doing it with like 10 people around me, like shouting in a room at like 4 a.m. with blunt smoke. But you know, that's all, almost all the hip hop stuff I've done has been in that more.
Yeah, because like again, like Kanye is like notorious for that, for giving dudes writing credits that are just sitting in the room throwing out ideas at 2 o'clock in the morning when they're out in Hawaii for My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. You look at the credits, it's like so long, and he's like shameless with it. I feel like some guys try and hide it or take all the credit for it, but I just admire that so much about him.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, yeah, it's interesting to hear you say that, actually, because I feel like if anything, the reputation among that world is more that it's like impossible to get paid.
Like, yeah, totally, totally.
So it's like, you are right that there's tons of people credit on those things, but oftentimes I feel like it's not even everyone that worked on it on there. But it's like, there's a few reasons why that happens, though, because also like every sample is usually credited to like an entire band. So all, you know, there's like 5 writers that, because you have one sample, 5 writers are added to the writing, and that's just like a legal thing. But yeah, no, yeah, no, I think you're right. It is good that they put those names on there.
And I know, like, you were working with Nas too. I know he puts like different kids on his as credits on his album to get royalties and stuff like that. So it, yeah, Nas is one of my favorite rappers of all time since I was like 14 or 15. What was the process like working with him? I picture him.
Well, that was one of the ones I worked with Kanye on. So actually, believe it or not, like I never even met Nas. Like Nas is
really
a present. Yeah. So like Mike Dean is the one I really was close with and still am, like, and he hit me up about replacing a couple orchestra samples for that album, and I basically just did them and sent them back and forth with Mike, and then that went well, so I met Kanye and worked with them on the Tiana album the next week. But yeah, I've never met Nas. And it'd be funny too, because I've also worked on the Lil Nas X Nas remix of Rodeo, so I've worked on two different things, like unrelated products that I've not on them, but I've never actually met him.
That is funny. I'm glad you brought up Mike Dean, though, because that's somebody who, like, if Kanye had never worked with Mike Dean, I think I'd still love Kanye, but that it elevates to a whole new level of, like, Kanye expanding into the, you know, a lot of those, like, super, like, analog synthy the sounds and all that kind of stuff. So what was that kind of like? I think Mike Dean found you on Twitter, right? That's kind of what I heard.
Yeah, man, you did your research, or at least you read my interviews. But, Mike, that was pretty rare. Almost everyone that I've worked with, like, was the result of, like, a direct introduction from someone else. Like, it's like I can trace most of the relationships I have back all the way to, like, how, you know, to like a friend of a friend at the very beginning, you know. But the Mike Dean one is one of the very rare ones where he just literally found me out of nowhere. I did this concert that you probably heard about called Yeethoven, which was like orchestra playing Kanye and Beethoven music, right, mashed up, and it was mostly focused on Yeezus and had a ton of like Mike Dean's like synth work. It, you know, it was like a big basis of like the music that I was interested in putting in that setting, which I actually did that show with my friend Yuga Kohler, who's from Lexington, Mass. So
another Mass. Shout out.
But yeah. Yep. That it was just like a good viral like thing, like, you know, and then I never expected it to have any effect on my like career as a producer or artist. I just thought it would be like a fun thing to do, that it's really like Yuga's idea to, you know, and then we just came up with it together. But yeah, he just like followed me on Twitter. And actually, the funny thing about that is he followed me on Twitter. I didn't even notice for a year.
Oh, damn.
Like, I just, like, if you don't, like, see the notification, then like, that's it. You're never going to, unless you're like looking at who your followers are, you're never going to notice. So I literally didn't notice for a year until I was looking at his profile. And just like, oh my God.
That's so funny.
I followed him back. And I was just like, literally, like, I probably could have been on so many more projects, but it's good. I did it just in time to do the five albums. That period, and then Astroworld, so it ended up working out. It was a good. That was all like 2018, I guess.
So, did you like know? Were you like a big Mike Dean fan at the time, or were you kind of like, oh, okay, like kind of brush it off?
Yeah. I mean, I was aware of like his involvement in all these songs that I was a fan of, but it's actually interesting because that like the dark, like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy was like the album that really sent me on this course, and I went back through recently and like almost like if you look at every song, there's only really two people that are credited, I think, on every single song, and it's Mike Dean and No ID, and those are the two people I've worked with more closely than almost anyone, you know, in terms of like producers. So it's like, yeah, it was like a cool full circle moment, because I hadn't really like those two names weren't like obsessive things for me. I like knew they were, but I wasn't like, I'm going to get to these two guys. But it ended up just being that those were the two that sort of interested me through very different circumstances, and like, you know, things happen for a reason, I guess.
No ID is a pretty incredible mentor to have. Just his coaching tree, if you will, of people that he's mentor, and Kanye, and I forget what song it is, but No ID, My Mentor, and I'll Let the Story Begin. Like, it's just, he is unbelievable. Yeah, Big Brother, yeah.
Yeah, no, he's great. I mean, I saw him last week. He's like, he's really like Yoda-like in his wisdom, and he's just great. Just gives really good advice, really thoughtful ideas about music, and yeah, he's a very like big picture guy. I think him and Mike are kind of opposite in that way, because Mike still to this day is doing like detailed mix and production stuff on everything he works on, whereas I feel like No ID is taking more of a role of like overseeing big projects and putting people together and kind of imagining how, you know, they both are like at the top of their game, and it's really cool, but they're like, in a way, they're kind of like complementary to each other in that way.
I'm just curious of what Mike's like creative process is of you watching him, because I love watching his Twitches, and I could just listen to him sit there and just mess with synths for like 5 or 6 hours. I'd imagine that's what a lot of his process is just, because I mean, you can, and when you're watching him, you can tell that his mind is moving at a direction that my mind certainly can't even process, of him just listening to sounds and listening to waves and stuff.
Yeah, he's definitely a big synth fanatic, and I mean, you can watch that in real time if you've watched his like jams from last year, like the start of quarantine or whatever. You can pretty much, like, that is pretty much it. You're just seeing him like turn a bunch of shit on and just messing with settings on, you know, and playing. And then he made an album of, or two albums of that stuff. But I mean, like, I mostly work with him. I've never really done sessions with him starting stuff. almost everything I've done with him was like him finishing stuff, which is like really his role, I think, on most of the products that I personally am excited about. Like Astroworld, it's like he didn't really start most of those beats. They like came from various places, but then he kind of pulled the whole thing together and figured out how to like put in these outros, hired me to put strings on stuff. Like he's thinking in terms of like, yeah, the cohesion of the project and like, you know, just mixing it as he does it kind of. So I think I kind of relate to that, actually, that aspect of his job. And then, yeah, if he's like, this needs a synth solo, he'll turn one on. And that's like, I'm sure like his favorite part, same with or guitar solo or whatever. But I think the part that I really relate to is more just like the general, like, how do I make this flow like one continuous thing? And just like one thing that I think I asked him if he invented this and he said he did. So I'm going to trust his word on it, but that there's like, it's like fairly trendy. And I hear it in a lot of places now to end a song with like the beat just being pitched down and spit and slowed down by half. And that's just like a way to make an outro out of a song with, if you don't have any, you know, anything else kind of, and he does that on a ton of Travis stuff. I think Sicko Mode even does it. And I saw him do that on like a designer track that we worked on, and like he did that to my strings, and I was just like, oh, that's so cool hearing like halftime. Like
secret
that.
Sauce, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just like, yeah, just experimenting and yeah, just trying to do stuff that's different, especially in those outros, which is something I definitely do a lot of with artists as well. Cause that's like, that's really the part of the song where it's like, by that point, people either like the song or don't like it, and then you can get weird. But like, you can't. Like giving him a weird 40-second intro is like a much riskier move, but a 40-second outro you can do, because by that point they're exactly. already sold. You know what I mean?
It's easier to get away with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's it like listening to like Mike Dean's? Because you bring up a good point with his two albums that he recently dropped, like the 421 and then the last one is called 422. For you to be in the studio and like kind of see his process, what is it like? Like, what is does it add to the perspective of listening to his like music? Because like for me, if I'm listening to either of those two albums, it's an experience, whether I'm as sober as could be or not. Like, you just sit there and you're like, whoa, like, this is absolutely crazy, yeah. You know?
I mean, it's funny kind of think about it. It's really that stuff, just, like, what is involved in doing that, because they're live, really. Like, it's like he could have made albums like that if he wanted to that were, like, crafted, but they are just live performances, really. He, like, turns on an ARP. Then lets the ARP go, maybe changes it a little bit, and then it's just kind of like looping, and then he's sort of like adding a solo on another instrument, you know, and just kind of like, what can you do with two hands and like a thing that just, you know, anything that'll sort of play on its own basically if you set it to. And I think that's what's interesting about that project. It's like, and I think because I had the stems, because I did those like two orchestral versions at the end of the 422. So I had the stems, and it is like it's a good visual to see too, because it is really just like you can see like, oh, it's this instrument, and then it stops, and now it's this instrument, because like that's how many.
It's so cool, yeah.
Like, it can't, you know, like you couldn't just have it. But if I'm writing for orchestra, I would probably keep this thing going, and then you know. But you can see like the thing is entirely constrained by just like the fact that it's one person doing it live.
Right.
And I think that so. I think having to think with that as like a compositional limitation is kind of interesting.
Which is so awesome, by the way. I'll say, like, I've been listening to that last album a lot this past month. So it's really cool, you know, even with that in mind, to be able to talk to you tonight.
You guys are the real Mike Dean stans, then.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, too, with quarantine and, like, Twitch and everything like that. He was almost, like, such a mystery man to, like, us, like, me as, like, a fan. He was, like, the kind of the guy who would come in, and, like, there was always, like, stories you read in an interview of, like, we brought Mike Dean in the last couple days before the album, and he just put this stuff down. That was crazy. And to just be able to, like, have these guys kind of put out, like, their, again, like, secret sauce, or just watch him just sit there and work is just a crazy thing to do as a fan.
I think he's been an interesting role model for me, because that is, like, that's kind of the position I've found myself in with most of the big projects I work on, is that I'm basically just, like, coming in at the very end and finessing stuff. Sometimes a lot. Sometimes it's like, oh, we should completely reproduce this song. Sometimes it's just like, yeah, we should like mute a bunch of stuff, which is like the Rick Rubin approach, I guess. And then sometimes it's like, yeah, here's like a cool outro. Here's a transition. And like, I love that part of the process, because like, it's more fun to like work on stuff that's actually going to come out, I guess. And like, if you're early in the process, then it's like, with 07 or Shake, like, I mean, I love her. I love the music we're making, so I'm, like, down to do it. But, like, you know, like, 80% of what we do is not going to get used, because we're making, like, 150 songs. You know what I mean? And that's, like, that's normal. That's, like, how it is with most artists. And for her, I'm down to do that. But like, I couldn't do that for that many artists, because it was just almost everything I did would not be getting views, and it just feel like I was like, you know what I mean? Like one session a day with a different artist every day, and almost none of this is getting used. It's kind of like, I tried it for a while. Like, I mean, that is like what pop producers and writers mostly do, because they're trying for hits. It's like, all right, we're going to try to write the next Katy Perry hit today, and you know, tomorrow we'll try again, and you know, just keep doing it. And if you're really lucky, you get one. But I don't know. I'd rather like just do a cool outro on a song that like where the song is absolutely coming out. And basically, if I do a good job, they'll use my shit. It's like, I find it more satisfying.
Yeah, it's definitely a good feeling. So who are some artists that you want to work with that you haven't been able to yet?
The Weeknd, Post Malone, Drake.
Yeah, Drake's got to be in there. Yeah.
The thing on Drake, though, is I don't think he really works with the people. Like my friend Roger has produced for him. Or he has, like, he did the loop on, what the fuck is that song called? It was like a brass. It came out like a few months ago. I don't even remember the name of it.
The one that's like,
what's next? I think.
Yeah. What the hell is this song called? You're probably right.
Yeah. I think we all have the sound in our head.
Brass. I'm like, that's the first thing that comes to mind.
Damn. They don't even listen on his production discography. I don't know why. Oh, Laugh Now, Cry Later.
Oh, yeah.
Damn. Yeah, wow. Yeah. So he made that loop, that main loop.
Yeah, that's his loop. Exactly. The music loop. Yeah. So, but I don't know. Like, I haven't asked him about it, but I don't think he was in the room with Drake. I think he probably just sent that to 40 or someone, and someone was just like, here, send me like 5 ideas or something. And you know what I mean? And then he probably just like heard it was coming out. Like, I don't like Drake. I'm pretty sure Drake just works with 40 and that's it. So it's like, it wouldn't even be like, it's like cool to, I don't know. It's like, now that I think about it, it's like, maybe I don't really care that much about that. It's like, it'd be cool for the money, and it'd be cool.
Reed, thank you for working with Drake.
It would, yeah. I mean, it would open up a ton of opportunities probably. Like, if you know, like instantly everyone want your price would go up. So yeah, I mean, like on that level, it'd be cool. Yeah. But I think I'm more excited about, again, like 070 Shake and like people like, there's this dude Rumor who's spelled RMR. You probably saw it. It's like he's a ski mask wearing singer who had a country music cover.
The music video is phenomenal.
Incredible. Yeah. So I've been working with him a ton and with Shake, and like, I'm really excited about those artists, because like, I feel like I'm building like real relationships that like hopefully can turn into like me opening for them on tour, or getting them featured on a song, or whatever. It's like that, and I'm learning from them, their taste, like that. That's like more exciting to me than like the Selena Gomez cut or whatever, which is cool, and again, probably like raises my price a bit. But it's like, and I love that song. I'm actually like a big fan of a lot of what she does, but like, I'm not gonna put her on one of my songs. I'm not gonna open it. Like, it's just like that relationship doesn't really have any utility to me beyond, you know, for my artist stuff and for what I really care about with this classical shit. It's just like, you know, it's just like music industry shit at that point. But it's still cool.
Yeah, I did not know you work with Rumor. That's very interesting.
Constantly. Yeah, literally, I spent except for Shake in the past couple months. But yeah, before that, I was with him almost every day.
That's cool.
I have him on my album actually. Yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah, he's one of the features on the album.
Oh, that's,
and Clemens
crazy.
Also is another one.
That's wild. And then, yeah, 070 Shake. I mean, that's an artist that I've been watching for, like, I don't know, the past couple years. She has so much potential, too. I mean, I think as soon as I heard Guilty Conscience, I was like, all right, this is, like, really cool. You know, she's doing something that's like, yeah, it's so...
And Ghost Town, too.
And, just like, that's, holy, like, another level,
holy
too.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Because, like, with, like, those... Like, the way that Kanye did that was so awesome, those release parties, and, like, just hearing her voice come in, it was like, and, like, I was, like, reading the, like, live, like, tweets or, like, whatever, like, live chats, and people were like, yo, and, like, it's like, yeah, there's this girl from New Jersey, it's like, holy shit, this is awesome, and I went and listened to all of her shit, and it was so awesome. Yeah. Like,
same. I mean, that was the first I'd ever heard of her, but she actually, like, had been kind of popping for a while at that point.
That freestyle that she has like that big group freestyle.
Yeah, exactly.
And I had listened to that before and watched that music video, and I was like, oh, this is the same person. This is because she was, I like, no diss to any of the other people that were in that group freestyle, but it was like watching that music video with her. I was like, oh man, this girl is a star. Like, first tat, face tat, mama had to face that. It was like, oh man, this is super, super cool. Yeah.
you know, she's a legend. It's been cool. Yeah, it's like I worked on her last album, but I was like, I only like met her once during that process. But this time, I've just been there with her, and like, she has like a house in LA right now. And it's just been with her and this guy Dave Hamlin that produces a lot of her shit, and the engineer, and this kid Vinny, and this other guy 070 Sebastian. And it's just kind of like, yeah, every night feels really good. I like that. The only other stuff I really locked in with to that extent was like Vic Mensa a couple of years ago, where again I was just like basically there every night from midnight to 4 or 5, and like, yeah, just got really close with that group, and it's a good feeling. But it's, you can only kind of do it with one artist at a time, and if I was on tour, I probably couldn't do it at all, and that is my goal, to get on tour as my own shit next year. So, you know, but while I can, I'm doing it.
Awesome. And for people that are listening right now, though, to acknowledge how much we appreciate Johan, like, we were trying to schedule this earlier today, and obviously you have a session later with 070 Shake, so we were trying to figure out how to coordinate the podcast, the radio bit, and then you were like, yeah, I mean, if it has to be, I'll pop out of the session. We were like, whoa, no way. Like, we can't. Well,
I would do it for the 5 minutes, but the sessions are like, I think it's kind of what I was saying earlier, like, those sessions are like, it's a big group of people.
Right.
So it's just like, it's like, if it'd be one thing if it was just me and the artist, where it's like you really couldn't do that without being like, kind of like, is it okay if I do this? But there, it's just like, I don't know, you can just take a call. You know what I mean? It's like, there's just enough going on that like, people kind of are standing out. Like,
yeah. We still appreciate it, though.
Yeah, we really appreciate it a lot. Yeah,
no problem.
So, have you been in the room with Brock Hampton, like with a lot of those guys? Yeah, I mean, that was another group that I like vividly remember sitting on the train going home from work and watching Heat and Gold, those music videos back to back when it first came out. I was like, man, these guys are so, so cool.
Like, big boy band. Like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. That was so like, could you really feel, and especially now, the way that they've just evolved, and I think they've said that their upcoming album like might be their last, but
yeah.
What was the energy like working with those guys? Because it seems cool, like, man.
Yeah, they're very like kind and positive. I mean, Romeo's the one I've spent the most time with. He's like the sort of producer, lead producer of everything they do. And he's from like Connecticut, and I spent a lot of time in Connecticut, so we just instantly connected. And then Kevin, whose real name is Ian, is super nice and kind of like quiet. And then the other guys mainly would just kind of like pop in and out. Jabari, I worked with a bit during that. But yeah, primarily it's just dealing directly with Romeo on most of it. And yeah, I mean, it's just positive, kind, like quiet kind of energy. Like, I mean, they're not super loud or boisterous people in person.
And I like, it seems like they've kind of like almost been through the ringer too. They were such like a huge next big thing. And like you can hear it in their music too, just some of the shit that they've gone through, especially as like a group of being like young guys like that and having to go through the industry and touring around as a group has got to be just tough. And they fought through it and they make incredible music now still.
Yeah, I think all things considered, like they seem pretty healthy and happy. Yeah. And I mean, I think even at least based off of what they've been saying, like, yeah, like I think they want to do like a sort of poppier album. And then, I mean, I think they just want to like do a bunch of side projects and stuff, but I'm sure they'll come back together and do more albums down the line. But I think they just don't want to be like purely grinding and touring nonstop.
Yeah. It's cool to have multiple lenses and, you know, being able to create and have multiple projects, which is, you know, in a lot of ways, it's like kind of like what you're doing too. You know, you're doing so much on the production side, but then also you have your own, you know, solo music that you're doing vocally and stuff. So, how did you get into like that space of creating? I'm kind of curious to know the process. And this is something that I don't know if I fully like was able to do research on with like, you know, reading previous interviews and stuff. But like, you know, obviously like you were doing classical music, you got into production. Where did solo vocal music come into play?
Well, what really happened is that it, like after getting into the Kanye shit, I was in like school still doing classical music. And my interest when I was in classical had been, and still is, to like find ways of making that music into like a bigger sort of cultural phenomenon in America, where, you know, it isn't on right now. And I already had a lot of ideas for how to achieve that. But I think hearing that Kanye album created this idea in my mind that like, oh, like if you're like a big, well-known artist, who's known for pushing boundaries, then then the fans will ride with you for a lot of weird shit. And that's probably the best way to get to where I want to be in terms of being able to have the impact I want on classical and like doing whatever Broadway and film and all that type of stuff. So basically the goal has always been to be the artist, and I just happened to have success as a producer first. And so I followed that because, you know what I mean? But it's like the goal, I really have actually been releasing music the whole time, and I had a different name for a while, but all that music's gone now, you know, it's whatever. And then you can even hear my sound has like evolved quite a bit with the music I have out as Johann Lennox that, like, you know, it's still evolving. I think the album is going to be the best shit yet. I mean, if you listen to like Phases by Cousins, me featuring Cousins, Stiz, like that, I think reflects the direction I'm going in. I think that's like the best thing I have out. And I'm just like, I'm ready to like fucking go for it. But I've been ready the whole time, but I feel like I just know so much more now than I did a couple of years ago. And like, I think maybe it also just took longer. Like maybe the production took off sooner, and then being around other artists gave me a lot of inspiration about like how to be a good artist. Cause I like really wasn't a fan of pop or hip hop music as a kid. So I don't really know what it's like to be on the other side of that kind of relationship with an artist. So it's like, it's been kind of like, I've had to like learn that stuff in a sort of inorganic way, you know, like just being like, oh, well, what is going on in pop music? You know, like, where do I fit? And it's been a lot of trying different shit to see where it fits. Like, it wasn't just like, I think most artists come up because they're huge fans of certain artists and they want to follow their footsteps. But for me, it was more like, well, I just like Kanye, but I'm not a rapper. I don't want to be a rapper. So it's just like, I had to find out how to sing and, you know, what my production should sound like, what I'm going to sing about. And I think it just took a while to come together, but now I'm good.
And it shows too. I mean, your music is so organic, and just the sound and authenticity that comes through is just, it doesn't sound like anybody else, which is huge.
Thank you.
You also have that vocal strength too, where it's your vocals specifically are so unique and so just like, legitimately pleasing. You're not just a good singer, but like you have such a quality voice. It's like you know, in modern day, like when you hear like The Weeknd, like you're saying, or like Frank Ocean, you know, it's like you listen to these voices and you're like, all right, there's a lot that can be done with that. I feel like you have one of those voices that, like, now, like when I hear your vocals come up, I'm like, okay, this is by default, I'm like, all right, this is gonna be good.
And it can go in so many directions too.
Yeah,
like, thank you. Feature with Cousin Stiz, or you know, a slow ballad and stuff like that. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited for y'all to hear the album. I think it'll be a good, hopefully, like, reflection of that. I'm still trying to pin down a couple other features on it that I really want, but I think that, if anything, though, like, a lot of my production work has been thinking strategically about, like, if I produce for these artists, will that help me push my own shit because it'll help with the story, or because I can get them to feature or whatever. And I'm really thinking about, like, the artist project is the main focus for me, even though I know it seems like the production is because I've had more success there. And like my resume is mostly production credits at this point. But yeah, no, the artist stuff is that's where I'm headed with it. That's for sure.
Dope. Cool. So do you have a release date for the album yet?
Nah, not yet. I'm stalling for the next month or two by just dropping alternate versions of a bunch of songs that I have out. So like Phases, I'm putting out a version tonight that's like just strings and vocals and no drums at all. And then, yeah, I'm going to do a whole EP of songs that I have out already just in that format. So that'll come out in a few weeks. And then I'm going to do that other, the thing where I'm redoing the Johann vocal versions of my own songs. That'll come out like a few weeks after that. And then hopefully by that point, I'll be ready to get probably the Ant. Well, who knows? Whatever. One of the singles off the album by that point, the video and all that. And then, yeah, I mean, hopefully the album will be like out by the end of the summer, but I don't have a date yet. And then I actually have this whole other side project I did, which you'll probably enjoy. That's like, I got a bunch of like classical composers together and had them write excerpts of music for like live instrumentation and put it together with a couple friends into this like collage of an album of classical music, and then put like 11 rappers and singers on it.
Wow, so that's crazy.
Yeah, and I can tell you, so it's got like Danny Brown on it. It's got like 6:45 AR, if you know who that is.
Oh, yeah. Beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, it's got him, Lil B, the bass god, Vig Mensa, Channel Trace, Zakari, Masega, or two like R&B type singers, and then Casey Hill, Tommy Genesis, a girl named Empress Of, who's amazing. That might be it.
Damn, what a lineup. That's crazy.
Yeah, so it's just like, that one's like not, like they're barely songs. Like they're just, it's just like weird sound compositions that happen to have vocals on them. But yeah, it'll be, So that will come out probably before my album comes out. But I'm going to try to get it all out pretty quickly.
Is that going to be under your name? Or what name is that project?
The name of the project right now is ISO Monstrosity, which is just a word we made up. And I did it with a composer named Ellen Reed. And then, again, my friend Yuga that I did the Yeatoven show with. So we kind of exec produced it. But, yeah, it'll probably just be credited all three of us. That's awesome. I obviously all the artists that are on it are because of me. Like, they don't know people in that world. But the sort of the classical stuff was kind of all three of us.
Do you have a good relationship with Danny Brown? Have you worked with him? Like,
that one was strange, to be totally honest. Like, that, I mean, him and 645. I spoke to 645 on the phone. Danny Brown, like, literally, we just sent it through a publisher, and they were, which, by the way, almost never works. But the concept was so insane that I think they were just like, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I don't know. He's into weird shit, and they sent it, and he was definitely. And then he sent back audio, and that was it. So, yeah, I mean, that, but most of them were people like Channel Zakari, Vic Masego, Casey Hill. Those are all people I've like worked with. Lil B, I hit up on Twitter. Like, you can get a Lil B feature if you want. People don't really do anything interesting with it, but it's like, yeah, he'll just do it for you if you reach him. You know, he'll be like, if you want, Venmo me a couple $100, but if not, it's okay. It's like,
dude, we got to get Lil B on the podcast. Yeah,
I've been. Good. Didn't he like speak at like MIT or Harvard or something?
Yeah, I think at like Harvard Business School or something. Like
that. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, he's a real one. So that was, and actually tracking down the classical people was pretty hard on that too. Actually, like, just a lot of people to wrangle, which is why it was really like a quarantine project, and it should have come out in like October. But like, you know, just wrangling everybody and then doing the business on the back end is just like slow as fuck when there's like 25 collaborators on it. But we're getting there.
That's awesome.
I'm super excited to hear that.
Yeah, it's going to be very like experimental. I mean, like, I sort of see my own project as like, basically it's like pop music, but my solo project is like probably the more like commercial version. So it's like, hopefully reach a bigger audience with that. And then the cool kids and weird kids who really want some weird shit will have this experimental project. And hopefully that people start to kind of see like the range of shit I can do, and that, yeah, it'll be cool.
Awesome. That is awesome. Yeah, I'm excited, not just for the projects you have like coming up this year, just your whole career as a span. I feel like you have so much to offer that's so unique to the industry. And I mean, just to look back at hip-hop in the past 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, things are changing and developing, and there's a lot more like taking from different things. And so I am definitely excited to see how the genre pioneers and how things keep changing and everything you have going on. So, you know, listen, thank you so much for coming on. We're very appreciative, obviously, of you taking your time out of your busy day. Where can people find you on streaming? Where can they find you on social media? How can they keep up with everything, Johan?
Yeah, I'm at Johan Lennox on everywhere. So it's JohanLenox. And yeah, it's like, yeah, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok. I do a lot on TikTok lately. I've been having a lot of fun. Yeah. You can see me do videos on there where I like open up big songs I've worked on and just show you how it's to the extent that you can in 59 seconds explain what I did on the song and show people behind the scenes.
Wait, actually, we should ask you about TikTok. We talk about TikTok a lot on this show, so we might as well ask you, what are your thoughts on the TikTok algorithm, the For You page? Do you believe it's a conspiracy? We don't know if there's a system behind it, because like we see, like we've heard like a million explanations for how you blow up on TikTok, how you can pop off on there. And like, I don't know, like I had a video that had like 800,000 views, nothing before or after my TikTok should have accounted for that. It should have never happened, you know?
That's wild. I don't even think I have one that's quite, I think I have one that's maybe 600,000 or 700,000, which is the one of me talking about Astroworld. I'm gonna check and see where it's up to now. Yeah. But I mean, I think generally, I don't know, like having just watched, like, you know, firsthand watching the videos sort of pick up momentum. 700K, not bad. 700,000, yeah.
yeah, it's pretty good.
So I noticed that what'll happen is like it'll kind of get shown to like, well, I usually use hashtags, so that probably affects it too, but you know, it gets shown to people who are in, like, either your followers or the people who follow the hashtag or just anyone, I guess, in your region. I don't know, just whatever. I think they just test it on some people. And then, if like enough of those people hit heart or whatever, then it blasts like quite a bit wider or potentially like way wider. And then if it underperforms there, then it like cuts back down. You can kind of watch it. It feels like it's like every 20 or 30 minutes, or maybe it's by a percentage of the views, you know. But like I watch it, it's like, okay, it's sort of going along, and then 2 hours into it, it's just like, oh, it seems like enough percentage of people seem to be into it that they're like, all right, we're gonna go wide with this, and now suddenly it's just going, you know, up 1,000 views every, you know, couple minutes. But then, you know, but then it's not doing quite as well. So after 20 minutes of that, it's like, okay, now they're bringing it back down to like another trough of one of these, like, you know. So I think it's all like, I mean, it's clearly all automated, but I think that's the basic idea, is that every, well, I think what you're describing is that like, it does really nothing to do with the size of your profile. It really just has to do with like the virality of the individual video. So like, you know, if you have more followers, I guess that gives it more of a chance to test out and do well with people. But yeah, I think basically every video is just completely an independent object, and it's just how viral is this video or not, you know? So yeah, I think that.
Have you seen? I just know like a lot of like managers and stuff. They're like, you got to be on there. You got to post. Have you like seen people out in LA?
Yeah, that's why I got on there. I got like bullied into it by my manager and my label, and they were just like, "Yeah, you got to be on here." And I like ignored them for like 6 months, and then finally they were just like, "Yeah, just do this to human." Like my manager was just like, "Just do this," so they can't use it as an excuse, kind of, if they're not doing shit or whatever. So I started doing it. Yeah, it was, I mean, the first, everything I posted is still up pretty much. So I mean, yeah, they're like the first 10 videos I did didn't really do shit. It's like first 12, 13, 14, 15, and then. Yeah, and then I did one about that, we won the Channel Trace featuring Tyler the Creator song, and that got like 54,000 views, and suddenly I was just like, okay, cool. And then I just repeated that format. But, I mean, yeah, like everybody's different. My videos definitely depend on like me saying a famous person's name within the first 5 seconds of the video about a song I worked on, and like for the most part, when I talk about other stuff, it doesn't do as well. I've done a couple that are just more general, like here's how to make it in the music industry or whatever, but like I don't really enjoy that shit as much, and I don't really want it to turn into a channel of just like one of those guys who's like
a slimy salesman.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you should be following me because of my music, not because like, you know. But I don't know. Like, there's people who do both. Like, you know, like Kenny Beats or whatever manages to do, you know, work with really cool artists, and people think he's pretty cool, but he also is very open and does a lot of that behind the scenes shit too. So I feel like it's more possible now than ever. But yeah, it would be nice to like have my own songs picking up on there. And I haven't quite figured out what it seems like
crazy.
Very, very random. Like when a song just becomes like a challenge and like, you know, like that. I know there are like marketing firms that try to make that shit happen, but I don't think there's really a way to guarantee it would happen, unless you could just spend like $1 million on it, but, which is just like,
yeah, like I saw like a picture of one of like a farm out in some Asian country, and some lady sitting in front of like 100 phones, and you can like pay like some place out there to just sit there and like and scroll through all your stuff. Yeah, it's like, you know, that some companies and some labels are just throwing money at those split farms.
Yeah, or it could be that, or it's like, you know, get like just paying a bunch of big influencers to like do a particular dance to a thing all on the same week or whatever, and hopefully enough of their followers start to just think it's a real thing that it takes off. And like, you've seen that happen, but I don't think it's like, I think it was before TikTok, yes, but like the Harlem Shake thing, was that a Vine or whatever? I'm pretty sure that was, or maybe it was like the Black Beetle. Wasn't there a challenge for Black Beetle or something? Yeah. I'm pretty sure that one was planted. Like, they just were like, we're just going to make this before everyone was doing that.
And then they came out with, like, that Perplexing Pegasus song, like, right after Black Beatles. And it was like, here's the Pegasus challenge. And it did not catch on, like, as hard as Black Beetle.
Yeah, yeah. So there's no guarantee. I don't know what the best way to spend marketing money is. I'm trying to figure that out right now because I really want my album to do well. And I'm just trying to think, like, well, I can run ads on Instagram. And I find that those do okay. Actually, you've probably seen them. Like, I started running ads in Massachusetts that are just specifically me talking about being from Mass, and then like with lots of stiz in them. And like, it seems like those did really well. Actually, people were just like, "Oh hell yeah!" You know, it's like because I'm actually targeting people who wanted it.
Yeah. Did you know stiz while you were out here, or did you meet him out in LA?
We met in LA. Actually, I think we literally met at South by Southwest in Austin, but I was with like a huge crew of Boston people.
And oh, nice.
There's a ton of Boston people in like New Hampshire and Brockton, and you know, people that all kind of work together here. There's a producer named Lil Rich. There's an artist named Bia.
Yeah, Bia's awesome.
An artist named Aziz the Sheikh, who's from
New
Hampshire, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, they all know each other. I met you know, basically them all together, and like they all kind of work together in different combinations. And Stiz is one. There's a kid named Khalif who does like Afro pop, kind of Afro beat, whatever. There's OG Swagger Dick. I guess he's back out in Boston.
He was on our show last week. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah,
he's dope. I love him. Yeah, and like Michael Christmas, and yeah, I mean, this is like a pretty small crew. And like, no, I did not know any of these people in Boston, but I think a lot of folks met in LA. Like, yeah, there's this dude Quaku who like calls the whole thing Boss Angeles.
He's a really nice guy too.
Yeah.
It's good because I mean it feels like, and I guess we were probably younger too, so it was harder to really recognize, but it does feel like there's sort of a resurgence and a lot more people from Boston and Connecticut and New Hampshire and Vermont, maybe. I haven't listened to any, but and like supporting each other too, which is kind of important. I feel like a lot of people kind of gatekeep each other.
Yeah, and I try to do like my videos in Boston, and like, you know, having Stiz on the first single for the album was like a deliberate choice. Like, I really want that. Like, I feel like that is a big part of my identity, and like the stuff I sing about is mostly shit that happens in like the Massachusetts suburbs. It's not, I don't really sing about LA stuff. I don't really care about LA. I don't want like palm trees in my music videos and stuff. Like, I don't connect to any of that shit. So yeah, so it is like, yeah, Massachusetts is like to me the whole thing. So
have you checked out Van Buren? Van Buren Records?
Yeah, definitely.
Rocking awesome.
Yes, and they just dropped, so that shit is, it seems like everyone's finding out about that. So that's incredible.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Those guys are legendary.
Yeah. That's incredible. I think that's gonna, I think it's gonna get way bigger.
Very exciting time for the local music scene out here.
Yeah. Definitely. I'm excited to like spend more time there, honestly, too, like just working, and like be able to not just be in LA and actually be able to come back and work with up and coming artists and make an impact that way too. But right now I'm still like more on my grind and trying to like get to where I'm at, where I have that power. But
for sure. Well, we're definitely excited to see all the things that happen. I mean, we're not artists, but you know, we would love to connect with you when you come back here. We'd love to have you on the show in person. So
yeah, definitely.
Cool. Well, Johan, thank you so much again for taking some time out to talk to us.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, man. For real.
Whole House Podcast.
Thank you. Sweet.